Welcome back to the Taint Me Later podcast. I am your host, Noah Rubin, and this is episode 58. And for this one, RotoWorld's Raphael Johnson is going to join me to talk about the Knicks, the Cavs, and the Magic. So let's go ahead and get into it. And quickly, before I bring Raph in, I just want to remind everybody that support for this Fantasy Basketball International podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Shaving your jewels doesn't have to be risky business anymore thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer is all about keeping things smooth and safe so you can trim with confidence. Treat your wrinkle berries and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20. With Manscaped, it's easy grooming, no surprises. We know every dude gets the heebie-jeebies when it's time for a close shave down under, especially when using the wrong tools. That's precisely why Manscaped is my go-to for those delicate spots. Trust me, this trimmer will be your crown jewel's new best buddy. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. That is 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. Show your balls some love and feel free as a dove. As I said, this is the Taint Me Later podcast, and I'm going to be joined right now, actually, by Raphael Johnson from RotoWorld. Raph, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Obviously, living out in the desert, pretty hot. 100 degrees today, but yeah, other than that, you know, doing well. You?
You know, it's not quite that hot. It is pretty hot in South Carolina, not 100 degrees hot. But man, yeah, that's brutal. But it not much more you could say about that. Yeah. Other than, yeah, no, it's hot. But yeah. So Raph, with these, I've been trying to get fans of teams, fantasy analysts that are also fans of the teams we're talking about, because the people who pay attention to the teams the most are the fans. And you're a Cavs fan. I know that you're a diehard Cavs fan, born and raised in Cleveland.
Now I get it.
So just for clarity, Raph is actually a diehard Knicks fan. Figured I'd mess with him a little bit, but you know, we have fun. We'll talk about the Knicks first because that's a little bit more fun, and they had the best season of the three teams that we're going to talk about. They went 50-32. They were the second seed in the East entering the playoffs, made it to the second round, lost in seven games to the Pacers after beating the Sixers in six games. They have picks 24, 25, and 38, but recent reports slash rumors, whatever you want to call them, kind of suggest that they're going to be trading these picks or looking to trade these picks, see what they can add to their team. But having three picks after the season they had, it's a pretty good spot to be in. For the team direction, I've been kind of doing a team direction for everybody as we go through these. I think they're a true contender. Some of these haven't been that generous with what their team direction is, but I think if the Knicks were healthy, that they would have given Boston a run for their money. You know, they don't have the top five player in the league that many contending teams generally have, but they're a well-built team. They all buy into Tibbs' system. Brunson was playing like a top five player for a little while before he got hurt. Raph, how does it feel to be a Knicks fan right now?
It feels good. It was a little disappointing how it ended with all the injuries. But I think even if had they pulled out that game seven against the Pacers, they would have been in a bad spot against the Celtics just because of the lack of bodies. So, you know, 50 wins, I think, you look at what Leon Rose and World Wide West have done with the front office in terms of draft capital and things that affect, and also player contracts. This team's in a really good spot. If they wanted to make a major move, they can do that without really killing the nucleus of the team, or they can kind of stay the course. That can be dangerous, though. You know, I think you look at like the Knicks, the Pacers, you know, thinking that, well, if we just get healthy or whatnot, we'll be fine, but other teams aren't sitting still too. So you always have to take that into effect. But I think the Knicks are in a good spot going into this offseason.
Yeah, as a Hawks fan, I know what it's like to have a really good season then not do anything the offseason after, and we see how that has turned out over the last few years. But it's fun, probably more fun to be a Knicks fan than it has been in a really long time. This was the best season in a while. If we're looking at fantasy perspective for this team, the players, obviously it starts with Jalen Brunson. He was the best fantasy player this season, a top 30 guy. I remember when we did this last year, I asked you about Jalen Brunson. You're like, no, I think he could be even better this year because he had a breakout season his first year with the Knicks, which was kind of not expected him to be that good, but expected him to be better. And he took it another step this past season. So you were correct on that prediction. Do we think that he's going to take another step, or is this the player that we're going to see for the next few years, or was this even like an outlier season? You're expecting some regression next year.
I feel like this is what we should expect to see from him moving forward. Now he finished 16th in NINECAT. I don't think we should expect him to go too much higher than that, because then you're talking about first round value. And I'm not going to sit here and say that he definitely can't do that, but I don't think that's something that a fantasy manager who's putting together their draft board can expect that type of jump from him. But I think second round, you know, I think that's a pretty safe spot to pick him in drafts for next season. He was outstanding, you know, top five in MVP voting, second team all NBA. Obviously, you got Luka and Shea as a starting, as a first team guard. So that was bound to happen. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see, because he's extension eligible. There were some reports that he would potentially consider taking less this summer as opposed to waiting till next summer. If that happens, great. But, I mean, you're talking about potentially $200 million next summer or something to that effect, compared to, like, what, $150 now? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I know what I would do, but I'm not Jalen Brunson, you know? So, yeah, we'll see what happens there. You've got some big decisions with OG Anunoby and Isaiah Hartenstein. But, you know, Brunson, in terms of his value, I think you're looking at second round, maybe third, because I don't think his game is suited to where there's going to be a significant drop off in production unless he were to suffer a severe injury or something to that effect.
Yeah, and one of the early redraft mocks that both of us have participated in, he went 28th in that one. So that would be early third round value. Early 12 third, team. This was 14. This was 14, so he went the last pick of the second round, but that's basically a third rounder. So right on par with what you were saying. Some of these early mocks have been a little bit messy, but he did go right after Trae Young and Damian Lillard. Some of the others, you know, Tyrese Maxey went in front of him. Steph went in front of him. I think there's a lot of really good point guards. Like, obviously, that's a thing in the NBA, but also specifically in fantasy, a lot of these point guards are having a lot of success right now. And Brunson is one of those guys, early third round, late second. I think there's definitely an argument. It'd be nice if he played like how he did in the playoffs, but I don't think we're expecting for him to be able to do that over the course of the whole season. That would be pretty unreal, but we've seen him be capable of elite production, and hopefully that's something that he can continue for a few years, make the Knicks fun. The Knicks are, the NBA is fun when the Knicks are good. Whether you like the Knicks or hate the Knicks, you know, it's fun when they're good. Julius Randle is probably a pretty interesting guy to talk about. One, every other year he does good, every other year he does bad. Obviously that's not, I mean, it has been a pattern. It's not something that he is literally just having a good season then having a bad season, like on purpose or anything like that. But, you know, just looking at the last few years, he was outside the top 100 this year, last year inside the top 75, outside the top 100 the year before that, inside the top 40 the year before that. Are you expecting him to be better? Actually, even before we get into that, do you think he's going to be a Knick next year?
That's a good question. I think in terms of the potential moving pieces, he might be the easiest one to move. Not just contract, but the amount of time that he was out. We kind of saw what a rotation could potentially look like without him, as long as everyone else is relatively healthy. So I think he will be, just because I think the era of star chasing, the new cap rules kind of make that extremely difficult to do. And if you do it, you're looking at what, 1, maybe 2 years before you really have to make decisions about the cap space. And that could really do a number on your available player base. So I think Julius, he's on a good deal. And they played well when they had him and Anunoby healthy. I think they're like 14-2 or something like that when Anunoby played those first 16 games. So, man, because what this Knicks team missed during the playoffs was that second score, and that would have been Julius. So I think you can certainly argue that he's a good fit for this group. Obviously, some things will change with the rotation, but I think he'll still be a good fit if he's back. In terms of fantasy, like you mentioned, bit of a roller coaster in terms of where he's ranked, and I think the efficiency has a lot to do with it. Averaged 3.5 turnovers per game this season, which is a big reason why he was outside the top 100. If he can get that closer to 3 or just under that, and also I think he got off to a slow start in terms of the shooting percentages too. So, you know, when those things happen, that kind of puts him behind the 8-ball, and it's difficult to get back from it. So we'll see. Another season in which he's coming off of a surgery, that's something else to watch. I think that's a bit of a concern for fantasy managers. I don't think you let him slip outside of the top 100 in terms of where you're drafting him, but you're not going to use like a 5th or 6th round pick on him, I don't think. I think 7th or 8th would probably be a good place to kind of target him in drafts.
Yeah, I think that's fair, because I mean, it's probably a little higher in points leagues, but in category leagues,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's been pretty much, I mean, last 4 years, he's a little under 10 rebounds per game this year, but yeah. 20-point double-double most of those years, at least 24 points, 4 or 5 assists. Even he had the year where he had 6 assists per game. The defensive numbers aren't there. Like you mentioned, the percentages aren't great. But that'll play with the mm-hmm. right build. Like you can't – 25 and 10 and 5 is, yeah, you know, exactly. That'll mm-hmm. play in fantasy basketball. What do you think – as whether it's from a fan perspective or fantasy perspective, there's probably more just rumors, maybe even just speculation of a Julius Randle, Mikal Bridges swap, get all the Villanova guys back together. Is that something you're shaking your head? Is that something you'd be interested in, or you just don't see happening, or what?
I don't see it happening just because I feel like that would be too much to give up for Mikal. Very good player, don't get me wrong, but when you're talking about the need for that consistent scorer next to Jalen Brunson, I don't know if Bridges can be that guy. He's a far different situation with Brooklyn this year. They effectively started out with him as like their number one scoring option. That didn't work. I think he's better as a supplementary piece, but what the Knicks would need if they were to move Julius Randle would be something in between those two roles. And I don't know if Mikal would be the guy for that. Now, they improved significantly defensively with him, but that also puts even more pressure on you to re-sign OG Anunoby, because now you're looking at a spot where who's going to play the 4? And they get significantly smaller with that type of lineup with Mikal and OG. So I don't like that straight up. Personally, I think the Knicks would have to give up a little too much for that, to be honest with you. And I don't think that'll be a good move for them.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think it's just the nostalgia of getting the Villanova guys all on one team. Nostalgia
aside, I don't think I don't think that'd be great.
Yeah, but you mentioned OG. His numbers were down even before he was traded to the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
I think the numbers still were down after the trade because he was changing his role a little bit, adjusting to a new situation. Injured a good bit this year. I mean, what do we expect from him? I mean, it's still up in the air whether or not he even resigns, but assuming mm-hmm. he's back at work, what do we kind of expect from him next year?
You know, I think he has top 50 potential. We've seen him do that in the past. Most recently, 21-22, finished out just outside the top 50. Season prior, he was a top 35 player. So I think there's certainly that potential. Especially you get a full offseason in a training camp working with these guys. One of the best corner three-point shooters in the NBA. He wouldn't have to be a marquee scoring option in terms of, you know, isolation plays and whatnot, but he can get you to catch and shoots or drive on the closeouts. And then defensively, we've seen his work. He's going to give you at least 2 combined blocks and steals per game, if not more. So I think he has top 50 potential. And we've seen him get drafted that high in the past. I would not be opposed to someone taking him off the board at that point, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I think just looking at the numbers, the main reason for the drop is a little bit the free throw percentage.
Yeah,
dropped a little bit, but he's taking less than 2 per game. Not really changing all that much, but the steals dipped. I mean, it was 1.9 last year, and it was less than 1.5 this past season.
Yeah.
It's even though that's still a pretty solid number, that drop ends up affecting his value a good bit. But just with steals being volatile, I don't see why he wouldn't be able to get back up, especially with how much Tibbs will probably have him on the floor.
I do wonder how much of that was impacted by the change in coaches up in Toronto. You think about it, last season he averaged 1.9 steals per game under Nick Nurse. They went to a different system, not as much switching, not as aggressive on the perimeter. One steal per game in Toronto, got that up to 1.7 with the Knicks. So I do wonder if that was a matter of personnel / defensive approach more than anything on his part in terms of the decrease in production.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think the same exact thing happened with Gary Trent Jr., because he was a guy that was pretty consistent with the steals, and they fell off a cliff this year. And even Fred VanVleet was really good with the steals in this past year. I think it ended up being down because he was just getting credited for more blocks on swipe downs than on steals, but the numbers were still down, not playing for Fred for Nick Nurse. Not Coach Fred VanVleet, Coach Nick Nurse. Josh Hart was obviously really, really good in the playoffs, but he's not going to be playing 48 minutes per game during the regular season. And I would say that he's probably going to be playing off the bench if everybody's healthy again, even if he was as impactful as he was during the playoffs. I don't know. Kind of similar question. OG, what do we expect from Josh Hart next year, barring major roster changes that would open up a starting spot for him? But if he's in a reserve role, he's probably just a guy you want in the later rounds.
Yeah, I think he's a late round guy. Like, even if he comes off the bench, you know he's going to play at least high 20s in terms of minutes. His first season with the Knicks after the trade, he averaged 30 minutes per game off the bench and played 33.4 this season. So playing time's not going to be an issue for him. I think the one thing you're kind of keeping an eye on is the perimeter shot. He hurt his wrist late in the season, got that right, and was a bit more willing to take those shots down the stretch. He said he was going to work with J.J. Redick, but I do kind of wonder with J.J. Redick, the recent rumors, will J.J. Redick be able to train him this summer? So I think that's something that either way he's going to work at it. He gives you a lot in terms of the rebounding, defensive stats, some playmaking. The turnovers can be a bit high at times, but I think Josh Hart's going to be a pretty safe late round pick in standard league drafts.
Yeah. And obviously that's still enough time for him to make an impact. He's like not a big scorer, but a very good rebounder, and will get you a handful of assists, maybe a steal out per game, which is pretty close with what he had this season. As far as the center room with the Knicks, this year it was Isaiah Hartenstein, and then Mitch Robinson when he was healthy. And then, there were sprinkles of Precious Achiuwa when they were really, really injured, and Jericho Sims. But are you expecting Isaiah Hartenstein to be back with the Knicks, or are you expecting him to have played well enough to get a pretty big payday elsewhere?
I think he's played well enough to get a good payday. The question is, will the chemistry that he has with the Knicks, like he and Mitchell Robinson are extremely close and good relationships with the entire roster, will that be enough to kind of offset, the money that he would potentially have to give up? I think the Knicks, the most they can pay him annually is about $16 million. Now, you go to Oklahoma City, Orlando, places like that have also come up, they can afford to pay him a bit more in free agency. So I think that's going to be the question. And if he returns, I strongly believe he should be the starter. What he brings to the table in terms of that, the pick and roll game, he can make plays out of the short roll, the floater. I think he shot like 70-something% on floaters. I don't know the exact number, but very high conversion rate there. And he was a bit underrated as a rim protector. Now, he may not be the explosive athlete that Mitchell Robinson is, but given Mitchell's medical history, yeah, I think that's a situation where you're the Knicks. I think OG is a clear priority in terms of pending free agents, but Hartenstein is going to be important for them as well because you want that tandem. Like we've seen Dallas get to the NBA Finals with a really good center tandem. So I think the Knicks are going to try to do something similar if they can here.
Yeah, and if it ends up being kind of a minute split where whether it's 24-24, 26-22, mm-hmm. like whatever it might be, if Hartenstein is the starter, are both guys standard league, like 12-team, 9-cat options? Or would that kind of maybe limit Mitch Robinson's minutes to the point where, you know, maybe he isn't a guy to roster, even if he is as good as he has been?
I think he could still be worth rostering just because of what you get. Offensive rebounding, one of the best in the league in that area. The field goal percentage. Now, he's not going to be a high-volume guy in terms of shot attempts, but he will get opportunities around the basket. The one concern with him is the free-throw percentage. Like, you know that you aren't – you know, if you draft Mitchell Robinson late, I think you're a better spot. It's not like you're talking about an elite center who shoots poorly from the foul line, because then you draft him, you're talking about a free-throw punt in terms of your roster build. You may be able to get away with it when Mitchell Robinson is a late-round pick, so – I think he would still have value in standard leagues. He would take a hit, but maybe playing 22 to 24 minutes per game would help preserve him and from an injury standpoint, if anything.
Yeah, and that's a pretty – like you mentioned, Dallas has two really good centers. I mean, Boston has two really good centers as well, even though it's probably a little bit of a different situation. Having two centers is great. The Knicks will be – good either way, even if it ends up just being Mitch Robinson because Hartenstein does sign elsewhere. The last guy that we have to talk about with the Knicks is Dante DiVincenzo, who had an incredible season and arguably even better postseason, kind of like everybody else on the team, stepped up his play for the playoffs. Are we expecting this is who Dante DiVincenzo is, like a top 75 guy? Is like that what we should be expecting moving forward? Or is this kind of an outlier?
I think it's an outlier. But I also want to say that he may be the one who could potentially be impacted the most by a trade for like a wing scorer, because he's the one who largely had to take on that role once they traded RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickly to Toronto for Anunoby. So if he's in there as the starter, you know, maybe a 7th, 8th round pick it would be justified. But I think that's one of those things where it kind of depends on what the Knicks do. If they trade someone and try to get another wing scorer in there, a high-level wing, then he's someone who would probably drop to the bench and end up being like a late-round guy, if anything. So I think right now, as currently constructed, he would be a middle-round pick, like 7th, 8th round, but like I said, he may be the one who's most impacted by what they do during the summer here.
Yeah, which makes sense entirely. I mean, he was never a top 100 guy, and all of a sudden it's 3.5 threes per game while shooting 40% from three. Like, he's an elite shooter, like I would say, no doubt about it, but that's a big step up for him. I'm sure you'd love to see him keep doing that, but we have to be a little bit realistic here. Yeah. Maybe just three threes per game. Maybe just three. But that'll still play pretty well. Mm-hmm. All right. We will move on to talking about the Cavs, who went 48-34 this year. They lost in the second round after finishing 4th in the East. They beat the Magic in 7 games in the first round before losing in 5 to Boston. Played that entire series without Jared Allen. Played the last 2 games, I believe, without Donovan Mitchell. They have the 20th pick in this draft. And for their team direction, I said they're a contending team on paper. I don't think that they haven't proven that they are, but I think maybe on my paper, maybe the idea of the Cavs are, hey, they have this star young point guard in Darius Garland, this star young big in Evan Mobley, and then you know, another all-star in Jared Allen, and obviously the face of the franchise, Donovan Mitchell. You know, they have Max Strus, they have Isaac Okoro. Like, they have like some solid rotation pieces. Like, hey, like, this thing should work. It just hasn't. And there is an argument to be made that it would have worked had they not had the injuries that they had and had they not played Boston in the second round. Maybe they would have been in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, I keep bringing this up on podcasts, how it was, you know, the Cavs went 48-34 and then the Pacers were 47-35. Had the Cavs been the sixth seed, faced the injured Bucks, and then if they were to beat the Knicks in the second round, they'd be in the conference finals. JB Bickerstaff still has a job. So it's, you know, it's interesting how all those things work, but how do you kind of feel about this Cavs team? Because you didn't, based on your face, it didn't seem like you were on board with them being a contender on paper.
Yeah, I think the idea of the Cavaliers outweighs the reality, because there are still awkward fits there, whether you talk about between Mitchell and Garland on the perimeter or Mobley and Allen in the front court. They tried to address the perimeter shooting deficiencies this past offseason. You add guys like Max Strus, George Niang. But yeah, I don't know. Like, first and foremost, they have to hire a coach. And second, it seems like I don't think they're going to ask Donovan Mitchell explicitly who should we hire as head coach, but making sure they retain him is like a huge part of their offseason here. So yeah, I don't know. Like, besides him, I think he's clearly like that one lock fantasy option. You know, you're thinking potential first round pick in standard leagues. Evan Mobley, I think his ceiling is lowered by the fact that he shares the floor with Jared Allen. He's capable of stepping out on a perimeter, but as we saw in the playoffs when Allen was off the floor, Mobley was at his best when he was the one big on the floor, able to roam around and protect the basket a bit more than he would as the four. So they've got to figure that out. Depending on who you read, it might be a case of Garland wanting out of Cleveland if Mitchell gets re-signed just because he wants to have the ball, which you understand of a point guard. But I don't know. We'll see what happens there. But, man, there's just too many question marks with this team for me to buy into them being a contender right now, to be honest with you.
They have to figure out everything. Like, there's nothing that feels safe or secure other than maybe – and actually, I could be wrong if I haven't checked the contracts and Caris LeVert's a free agent, but the Caris LeVert's going to be the sixth man again next year probably feels like the only guarantee, which if he's a free agent, then I don't know what to tell you. Everything could look different in Cleveland next year. Like you said, they have to hire a coach. They have to figure out what they're doing with their big four. I mean, as soon as they lost, within a few days, but it felt like within an hour, there was rumors regarding all four of their main players, like, oh, like Darius Garland's going to ask out if they re-sign Donovan Mitchell. Who knows what Donovan Mitchell's going to do? Is he going to be upset now? Jared Allen and the team wasn't happy with him and him not playing through his injury, which we saw that kind of backed up by Marcus Morris going on, I forget which show, and talking about that as well, saying it's something he would have played through, which,
I mean,
okay.
I get it, but on the flip side, I think, I forget who wrote it, but his concern was the painkiller, the pain injection that he would have had to take. And you think back to what happened with Tyrod Taylor, where they punctured his lung. And I think that's something that came up. It's like, I'm not going to tell someone else how they should handle their body and whether or not they should get a shot or anything like that. So it's tough. You know, you see all these different things leaking out of Cleveland. And it's quite clear that Kobe Altman's got some stuff to clean up this summer.
Yeah, because even on top of that, it was maybe Evan Mobley's going to be not happy if they keep Jared Allen. And I think that may have just been
one eligible.
Yeah. And frankly, the upside of the guy you drafted with the number three overall pick a few years ago is probably it's higher than what Jared Allen has, even if he is an all-star. And then, the head coach, I mean – there was also Brian Windhorst said that Donovan Mitchell has similar control in the front office to what LeBron has, if not more.
What?
That's what Brian Windhorst said. So when you made the point about, I don't think Donovan Mitchell is going to be directly involved in getting a coach, like, he might be. They might say, hey, who do you want to be the head coach? We'll just name three guys. We'll interview them and we'll decide together. Maybe they'll let him sit in on interviews. It's probably not that far, but that would be pretty funny if they had Donovan Mitchell running interviews for the coach. But for fantasy, under the assumption that Donovan Mitchell is going to be back, you know, I guess it's not a guarantee, but feels like it is, especially if what Brian Windhorst is saying, and he has control in the organization. Yeah. He just had the best fantasy season of his career. Are we expecting him to just continue to be this good? And, you know, is he a guy that deserves consideration for a first round pick in redraft leagues next year?
I think so. I don't know if I would go so far as to take him like a top 10 pick, but, you know, right outside of that, or that round 1/2 turn would be a good spot for him. If he's re-signed and it's made clear that he's the marquee option for that team on the perimeter. So you also, you know, if that happens, you're also wondering what happens with Darius Garland. Like, do they try to make that partnership work for another season, or they try to move him right now? Between Mitchell and Evan Mobley and having to pay those guys, you know, like I agree with you, and you said that Mobley offers a higher upside than Allen, so he should be the priority there. Between those two and what you're going to have to pay to retain them, I wouldn't be surprised if Garland were the one moved. And if that happens, then you're probably talking about Mitchell as a top 10 player if he's the primary point guard in addition to that primary scoring guard.
Yeah, and looking at this early mock, you actually took him exactly at 10th. So maybe you're banking on Darius Garland being shipped out of there, which is very possible. I know there was already rumors that the Spurs could be interested, which, you know, we'll see. Would make sense for them to bring in a point guard, and hopefully that can help him bounce back. I'm pretty confident that Donovan Mitchell is going to continue to be at least a first round value in 9 cat leagues. Mm-hmm. And then it's just up to you how you want to build your team, whether or not you take him there. But I think, you know, really it was a jump in, like a slight jump in steals that kind of resulted in, and a career high, I believe, in assists that kind of got him to what he was this year. But for Garland, it was a bad season. Like, it was the best season for Donovan Mitchell's, not the worst season for Darius Garland. His rookie year was bad, but finished outside the top 100. Efficiency was, like, the shooting percentages were bad. Obviously, the usage was down because the usage for Donovan Mitchell was up. Are you just kind of thinking, hey, he at this point, he probably just needs a fresh start and that'll be good for him. Like, he can get back to being a top 50 fantasy player as long as he's split up from Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, I believe so. I think his new deal, when it goes into effect next season, if I'm not mistaken, or it did this year, they're paying a lot for a guy to basically be that secondary perimeter player when he's your starting point guard. And I don't think that's going to work out too well. So yeah, if he can land in a spot where he would be the unquestioned, obviously he'll be the unquestioned starter in Cleveland, but the unquestioned primary playmaker. And that's not going to happen in Cleveland if they retain Donovan Mitchell. So redraft league, dynasty leagues, you're kind of hoping that Garland gets moved this summer, especially if you have him rostered in the dynasty league.
Yeah, it might be time to buy low in a dynasty league, considering how bad this season was. But in the hypothetical scenario that despite this kind of feeling like a pivotal summer for the Cavs, they just kind of run it back with what they have and say, hey, we have this new head coach, whoever it ends up being, and they think we can make it work, so we're going to try and make it work. Garland just finished outside the top 100. Where do you think he should be drafted? Like, is it kind of like I don't remember exactly what it was last year, 4th round? Mm-hmm. Is how far has he dropped? Is he still like just too good that you have to take him in by the 5th round, or is it even later than that?
I think he's a little too good, you know, to let him go that far, too far down the board. Like, you maybe wait to like the 5th or 6th round, but I think even that would be a risk. He'd probably be off the board by that point in a lot of leagues. So, you know, we're still talking about someone who will be a starter. And while his numbers did decrease, it wasn't like they completely fell off of a cliff, so to speak. So we're not talking about someone who we're now questioning whether or not they should be in the NBA anymore. So it's like, you know, I think 5th round, maybe 6th, and if he returns to Cleveland with Mitchell, would probably be where I would kind of target Darius Garland in drafts.
Yeah, that is fair. And I think it could have just also been this was a down year and he's able to bounce back next year, regardless of who he's playing with. And I think it would help more if he was the primary ball handler, but even if he isn't, maybe it'll just, he'll just adjust and he'll work on it this summer. But the reports of him, you know, potentially wanting out if they stick with Donovan Mitchell doesn't make me feel super encouraged, but you're right. He's just too good. For the front court, it's kind of the same question as, you know, for Evan Mobley as it was for Darius Garland. Like, are we just waiting for the split? And when Evan Mobley is a full-time center, which is, I think, has kind of been the thing since he was drafted, was him and Jared Allen are going to try this for a few years, but at some point, like, they're going to have to make Evan Mobley the center. That's what his primary position is and should be. Are we just waiting on that? And if so, if it happens, how good can this guy be?
I think he has top 20 potential by himself. Like I said earlier, you know, we saw him in the postseason without Jared Allen, what he was able to do as a rim protector on defense, rim runner, two-man game on offense when he's the only big on the floor. He can shoot three-pointers, but I don't think asking him to kind of just hang out on the outside as a four is the best position for him. So, you know, they moved Jared Allen. I think that may be more pressing than the Garland situation, just because Allen, $20 million this coming year and then $20 million after that for free agency again. And you're going to have to pay Evan Mobley, you know, either an extension or you're going to pay a lot of money in restricted free agency next summer. So that's a lot of money to have tied up at the center position. And, you know, Mobley is not a four. I know they played him there for long enough, but his best position, his highest upside is as a five. So I think they're going to have to do that. May be the more pressing area to add to for Cleveland to address this summer. If they do, I think he's a top 20 guy in terms of potential fantasy value, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, this year it was almost a double-double per game, almost a block and a half, almost a steal per game. There's no reason to think that – plus a few extra minutes wouldn't hurt. I mean, he could get to, like, 33 minutes per game, more than, 11, 12 rebounds, up to two blocks over. Like, those are all, like, I think fairly realistic things. He's not a really good three-point shooter, but he showed that he's willing to take them. And can hit them. Like, he shot on 1.2 attempts this year, 37.3%, which is, you know, it's a good rate. It's not many attempts, but he doesn't need to be out there shooting five or six threes a game. But it opens up things on the offensive end, whereas having him at the four, it limits them and constricts them so much. It honestly is pretty impressive that Donovan Mitchell was able to do what he was able to do with 2 7-footers in the lineup on offense. So we know that Mobley has a sky-high ceiling, and we know that Jarrett Allen has been very good for the last few years. But I think if both of us were the GM, we'd be trading him and, you know, having Mobley be the center. But are we just kind of thinking, hey, Jarrett Allen's probably just, whether he's in Cleveland, whether he's somewhere else, he's just going to be a top 50 guy again that averages 15-10 and over a block per game. Like, that's just who he is. Doesn't really matter where he is. He's going to be solid.
Yeah, I would say so. He also averaged 2.7 assists per game this year, career high. I think the question there was, that an anomaly or is that something you can kind of build on, you know, if you're able to make more plays out of the short roll? He hadn't averaged more than two per game at any other point in his career before this season. So I think it's fair to question that. But yeah, I think top 50, he's a relatively safe option. Like, if you asked me in terms of like safer fantasy options, like a fourth or fifth round pick, you draft him or say, like, I know this isn't the most popular guy, but Tobias Harris, like, he's a relatively safe top 50 guy. I would rather have Jared Allen, because I think he offers a slightly higher ceiling just because of the shot blocking potential and a field goal percentage. But you're not expecting him to become like a second round player. You draft him in the fourth or fifth round, you're like, okay, that's going to be the baseline for him, and we'll build from there.
Yeah, he's not – I mean, he's more exciting than Tobias Harris, but you're right, he's not the most exciting guy. but he's going to be – he's solid. Is there anybody else in Cleveland that's kind of worth? But I mean, you'll probably, you know, have Max Strus for a few weeks at a time if he's hitting shots. You'll pick up Caris LeVert if Garland or Mitchell's out of the lineup and he moves into the starting lineup. But is there anybody else in Cleveland, like, I guess, per redraft purposes, that you could see having value next season?
Not really. In terms of drafting, not really. I think, like you said, we're kind of looking at streamers, whether it be LeVert, Max Strus, or even someone like Dean Wade. Like, he missed a considerable amount of time down the stretch, the knee injury. He's someone they really like, but we'll see what happens with him with the head coaching change, whether or not he will still get those consistent rotation minutes. But yeah, I think outside of the top four that we discussed, you're pretty much looking at streaming options throughout the course of the season.
Yeah. And another guy that was good at times when he was given the minutes that you're probably not going to look at in redraft leagues, but could be a good, pretty good dynasty stash, is Craig Porter Jr.
Yeah.
Who got a contract because he was playing pretty well for the few games that he was able to start because they were dealing with so many injuries. But barring them having injuries to Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Caris LeVert all at the same time, he's not ever going to see enough minutes for that to matter next season. Maybe in a few years, he'll develop enough to be a rotation guy. But at this point, nobody else really.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So we'll move on to Orlando, who went 47-35, finished fifth in the East. I was writing their, I think, what are those called? The articles, the team recap articles we're doing.
Yeah, fantasy basketball season recap.
There we go. Those things. Mine on the Magic came out earlier. This was their best season since Dwight Howard was on the team, which was kind of cool. Wow. Or at least their best record. It was still just a first-round exit, which is something they've done a few times since Dwight left. But lost the Cavs in seven. But still, very successful season after, you know, years of being kind of stuck in the middle and then a few years just in the lottery and years in the lottery before that. Finally feels like they have something going for them for the first time since Dwight left. They have picks 18 and 47 this year. And their team direction, I have them as an ascending contender. Like, as this team develops, they're going to prove that they are a true contender, especially in the East. I think, I mean, had they beat the Cavs, like they almost beat the Cavs the first round and probably could have been pretty competitive against Boston in the second round. I don't think they would have won, but they did well against Boston during the regular season. An elite defensive team, which you don't always see out of young teams. Their offense was more of the issue, but how do you kind of feel about this Magic team moving forward?
Yeah, I think they're headed in the right direction. Obviously, this summer, adding shooting to that rotation is going to be critical for them. We've seen Klay Thompson be mentioned as a potential target in free agency. They need guys who can shoot to play off of Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero. I think that would help, especially Banchero's efficiency or lack thereof. That's been an issue for him. As good as he was in the playoffs, we've also seen him have some incredibly high turnover games too. So I think addressing the shooting, and other thing, keeping guys healthy. You know, we've seen it. Guys like Markelle Fultz, he'll be a free agent. Jonathan Isaac, Wendell Carter Jr., guys have just struggled to stay healthy. So I think that's not really something you can really address in free agency in terms of just guys staying healthy, but the shooting and then the playmaking, those are going to be the two things for them to look at, because this is a group that if they get it right down there, they could be a contender for a few years in a row coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, the duo of Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner is one of the best young duos in the league. They have so much upside. Even though, I mean, Franz was better this year in fantasy, but still, I felt like he could have taken a little bit more of a leap. Like, the three-point percentage was also really, really down this year. So I think he gets that back up, and he's just automatically just – his fantasy value is going to go up. He's going to make more of an impact and just make more of an impact for that team outside of fantasy. You mentioned them adding shooting. It really, like, honestly, outside of those two and maybe Jalen Suggs, like, they probably could address everything else. Like, I still think that they're – they have a very deep team, and like they have a couple guys that have a lot of upside. They just drafted Anthony Black and Jet Howard the lottery last year. Cole Anthony's still very good. You know, Jonathan Isaac, when he's healthy, is very good. Markelle Fultz was disappointing, but you know, whether they're going to need to add shooting, they probably need to figure out something at center, because Wendell Carter Jr. is solid. Mo Wagner is solid. Gogo Batadze is solid. But like, is that a center rotation that's going to get it done against? I mean, we've already talked about it. The Cavs had Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. The Knicks have Hartenstein and Mitch Robinson. You know, the two teams in the finals have really good centers. Mm-hmm. Is that center room competing with that? Probably not, in my opinion. And then also, you know, would having a true point guard make things easier for Banchero and Franz? Like, that might take away a little bit of the playmaking that they do.
Yeah.
But I think it opens up so much for the team and would help them improve on their efficiencies. You know, Banchero is known for having a low field goal percentage and high turnovers. He's been good everywhere else. Does adding in someone to facilitate for him, like, how much does that help him? How much does that help Franz? I think they have a number of things that they can answer this summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so. I think getting a stable point guard in there would kind of help speed things up from a decision-making standpoint for Paolo and Franz. I think they got a little stagnant at times offensively, just trying to decipher what the defense is doing. This team was a bottom five pace team in the NBA this past season. Elite defensively, but the offense, you know, bottom third in terms of offensive rating. So that's clearly where they have the most room to grow. But man, I think if you can get Paolo with a point guard that can get him in spots where he can be at his best and just get downhill immediately, I think top 100 in terms of the actual value would be more than fair to expect from him, if not higher. He's someone you tend to pick in that top 75 range, I think, which I have no problem with. You just have to be realistic in terms of where he'll ultimately finish up. Like, if you're in a turnover punt league, something like that, he's going to be a lot better for you than, say, a nine cat. So I don't know. I think you made a good point about the point guard and whether or not and what that would do for a guy like Banchero.
And maybe that's the answer to our Darius Garland question from earlier, and he needs to come down to Orlando, be the point guard there. I think that maybe they give up being a top three defense in the league and they drop a little bit, but they still have a bunch of really good defenders. So that won't take too much of a hit, but I think that does help the offense. I mean, Paolo can probably go down to closer to two turnovers per game, just having the ball in his hands a little bit less, maybe two and a half, maybe two is a little bit too much of a drop, but that would, you know, give him easier looks. Field goal percentage goes up. I think those are probably, maybe not the turnovers, that's probably something that, as long as he is a primary ball handler, will be an issue. I think it could be helped by a point guard, but, you know, stars generally have a bunch of turnovers.
Yeah, yep.
The field goal percentage is something that I'm assuming is going to improve regardless. How much upside does Paolo have, I guess, from a fantasy perspective, but also just like a basketball perspective? Like, is he a guy that can, if he improves on the field goal percentage, because he is like a 6'10 guy that can move well and shoot the ball pretty well, like get to the basket easily, like can he get up to 52% from the floor, be a top 25 guy in nine cat? Well, the free throw percent, we'll say top 50 because the free throw percentage is never going to be great. But is he a guy that can be like a top 10 player in the league?
In terms of removing fantasy, I think that's possible. We've seen a lot of young players emerging, you know, especially during these playoffs, and he was one of them. I'm sure some will say, well, top 10 might be a stretch, but I think the physical tools that he brings to the table make it more than possible. The athleticism and power that he brings to the table at 6'10". You know, just improve that shooting touch, you know, make better decisions in terms of the turnovers. I would not be surprised if he were a top 10 player at some point in his career. If you think about it, 2 years in, he's already won Rookie of the Year, made the All-Star team this year. He's clearly on an upward trajectory. So now it's on the front office to kind of put pieces around him that will make his job a little bit easier than it has been these first two seasons.
Yeah. his first playoff series, I mean, I think it went really, really well. He had one game where he was pretty low scoring, but they won by over 20. It just didn't really matter. Like, they just had a really good game. So what that he didn't play all that well. But other than that, the points went 24, 21, 31, bad game, 39, 27. He had 38 and 16 in the game that they lost, in game seven that they lost. A really, really good first playoff series. Also, his teammates didn't play all that well. So, Franz Wagner had a pretty bad series. He had two good games, mostly pretty bad, but he was obviously the focus of a very good defensive team and still was able to show out. So, I think the upside there is tremendous. Maybe not as much for fantasy. It's always going to be hindered probably by the free throw shooting. I can't see him taking a dramatic leap there. And turnovers, I mean, if you have the ball in your hands and you're effective with it, like, there's no reason for them to take it out of his hands too much to the point where turnovers just aren't an issue. Hopefully they can help it a little bit, but yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit for him. Hopefully we'll get some more Magic games on national TV this upcoming season so that people can watch him play basketball, outside of us league pass fanatics. For Franz, the other, you know, edge of the sword, the double-edged sword that is in Orlando, their stars, he's been really good, but it feels like he hasn't been able to really take a leap and kind of prove it. Even if he has improved from, each year a little bit, it almost feels like he's too passive. And if he was more aggressive, that the numbers would go up. And do you think that's something that we see from him where, I mean, he averaged about 20 points per game this year. Is he a guy that, hey, if we just see him shoot more, he can get to 25 points per game? Because he's a really, really good finisher, especially for another 6'10 guy. Is it something that we just need to see him shoot more? Or is it just like, hey, if he shoots his regular three-point percentage, yeah, sure, he can average 25 a game.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the big thing. His three-point percentage dropped by 8 points in comparison to his second season. That's a pretty steep decline there. So I think that's part of it. And then, like I said earlier, this is a team that plays extremely slow in terms of pace. So you have to ask, if you want him to get more shots, where are those shots coming from? Just because they don't play too many possessions, So I think that'll be the other thing. I think he's a top 75 fantasy player this year. I think that's a pretty fair floor for him in terms of his value. But he's not someone who you expect to have an extremely high fantasy ceiling. Now, obviously that can change if they, change some things with that rotation, but their foundation in terms of the defense and the way, the speed at which they play, it's going to make it difficult for him to raise his ceiling too much unless they were to make significant changes in terms of the point guard and in how fast they play.
Yeah. And adding in any point guard that I think would be good enough as a playmaker to get him easier looks probably is going to need a healthy dose of shots. There's only a handful that are really good playmakers that don't need to shoot a ton. And if it's, for example, a guy like Garland, he's going to need to get his shots, but we'll take out, his brother doesn't need to shoot anymore. That's 7 shots per game. Markelle Fultz took 8 shots per game. We'll just take those out and give them to Franz and Paolo. That'll work better. For Jalen Suggs, was not very good as a rookie, but he's gotten better every year. He was about right around 100th in 9 cat leagues this year. A lot of that was an improvement with his shooting percentages. Is that something that we think can stick? We also saw, it's a very different style of play, but another point guard in Orlando and Cole Anthony, that last season his shooting percentages went from 39 to 45 and then dropped back down a little bit this year. Is that something from Suggs that, he's just kind of developed his shot and he's going to be a better shooter and, 47-ish percent from the floor? Sure, that's pretty realistic. He almost shot 40% from three. That's just kind of what he's going to be. Or is he going to regress to the point where, the 9 cat value doesn't look as good?
I actually think it can stick. Just as important, the fact that he stayed healthy. 75 games played. but 45 as a rookie, then 19 his second year. Actually, 48 and 53 his first two seasons. So being able to stay healthy, you know, you're spending more time working on your craft and in the training room. That's a pretty big deal for him. So I think this can stick. You know, I think when we talk about potentially adding a point guard or a playmaker, you know, another playmaker to that rotation, Suggs is someone who doesn't really need to have the ball in his hands too much to have an impact in fantasy. You know, it's second team all defensive player, gets after on that end of the floor. You mentioned the improved 3-point shooting. It's where he can play off the ball, be kind of a finisher, whether we're talking catch and shoot or driving to the basket. So I think top 100 is certainly fair value for him. I don't know if I would draft him that high per se, but if you took him like right around that 100 area, I wouldn't be opposed, because I think what we saw this year is something that is easily something that can be duplicated by him moving forward.
Yeah, and I think also I think it's something that can stick. I think regardless of what they do at point guard, I'm not as worried about Suggs, because I think in college he was a point guard.
Yeah.
And heading into the draft, like, I think he was expected to be a point guard. He was almost in a little bit of an off-ball role this year, even if, you know, whether it was when Fultz was a starter or just when he was, I guess, technically the starting point guard. I mean, Franz and Paolo were the two ball handlers on the team.
Yeah.
So if they make a move for a point guard, Jalen Suggs is probably just going to be the two. And that's not going to be a very different role from what he had this year, where he is harassing guards on the other end defensively and knocking down threes and 40% from three. There isn't many shooters in Orlando, but if he's one of them and one of their better perimeter defenders, it's going to be hard to get him off the floor, which is great news for his fantasy value. Another guard that they have in Orlando, because, you know, they have pretty a lot of depth in their backcourt, in their frontcourt with a bunch of young guys. Anthony Black, who they drafted with the number 6 pick this past year, was not very good as a rookie. The numbers in college were really good, specifically defensively. He had a steal percentage in college of 3.4, which lined up. Herb Jones had a 3.4 steal percentage in college. OG Anunoby was 3.0. Jalen Williams was 1.9. Tari Eason's was higher, but his was absurd in college. So comparable with a bunch of guys who get a ton of steals and help in that category. But, you know, Anthony Black's minutes were limited, but even when he was on the floor and playing big minutes, the steals just weren't there. He averaged half a steal per game this year, which was the majority of his fantasy appeal. Like, I think he has some upside as a playmaker. The shot isn't great. It was really like, hey, like, can this guy come in here and make an impact defensively? The steals weren't there as a rookie. I don't know if you were ever an Anthony Black believer, but do you believe that he can end up being within the next couple of years a guy that makes an impact in fantasy, or is it already kind of looking like, hey, maybe this wasn't the best pick?
Yeah, I think he might be someone who's better suited for dynasty leagues and redrafts, just because of the perimeter shot or lack thereof. It's going to take some time for that to come along. I think that the nature of their perimeter rotation outside of Jalen Suggs didn't really do him too many favors either. You had guys in and out of the lineup because of injuries. So I think, Black may be someone, depending on how well he plays in summer league. Obviously, summer league players aren't the same as in-season players, but if he has a good summer league, he might be worth taking a late-round flyer on. I really need to see more. Yeah, I'd like to see more out of him in terms of the minutes, because there are some games he was in the rotation, spot starter, others when he just barely played. So, I don't know, man. I like what I see in terms of long term, but in terms of redrafts, I'm a bit more skeptical about him going into next season. But 2-3 years from now, I think he'll be well positioned to give them, you know, solid minutes and be on a fantasy radar in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, there was games this past year when he did start and he only played 20 minutes per game. Is one of those frustrating things where it's like, hey, the rookie's starting, let's see what he can do. And like for fantasy, it's like, oh, like keep an eye on this one. Oh, they're only going to play him 20 minutes. Well, how am I supposed to really know what this guy can bring? So I don't know, the guard room, and that it really is every position in Orlando that they have so many young guys that are kind of, you know, next to each other, they're soaking up each other's minutes. So it's hard for us to see all of them. And then they're also playing Gary Harris starter minutes, which is annoying because I don't want to see Gary Harris, even if he makes sense. Like, he makes sense. Yeah. He's a good defender. He's a veteran. Like, I get why he's in the rotation. I don't want to see that from a fantasy perspective. I want to see all the young guys play. But regardless of what they do, yeah, I think it'll probably be a couple of years. If they make moves this summer and say package a couple of their guys, such as Mark or Fultz,
Harris and Fultz are both free agents, so that's a lot of money coming off the books for Orlando. So,
yeah,
you know, that I think that's where a lot of your finances will be coming from in terms of upgrades that we spoke about with regard to point guard and perimeter shooting. So, yeah,
yeah, and honestly, for Anthony Black to see consistent minutes, it may take them losing both of them. And potentially even moving Cole Anthony in some sort of package deal as well. I think that's the only way that Anthony Black is playing enough minutes for him to warrant fantasy consideration just for next year at this point. Still definitely a guy to keep around in Dynasty, but we'll see. I don't feel like Orlando should feel like pressure to make a ton of moves this summer, but there are definitely paths that they should take that could improve the roster next year and make them like an actual contender in the East after returning for the playoffs for the first time in a handful of years and really actually kind of feeling like they have a chance to make a run for the first time in even longer. They have solid pieces throughout the roster, but those are the main guys that I feel confident in for fantasy. I mean, Jonathan Isaac, the main question mark is he going to be healthy? Because he's really good. He's on the floor, but he's just not on the floor a ton. Like, this season was so much more than he has played, like, really since the bubble. Wendell Carter feels like, at least for fantasy, he's regressed. Cole Anthony, nice sixth man, but not a super exciting guy. I don't know. Is there anybody else on this team that you would consider, even if it's just like a late round pick on, like, adding in a standard league?
I would say Jonathan Isaac is a late round guy. Like, you're not going to expect, I think 1 year is like a top 20 fantasy player or something like that. You're certainly not expecting that given the injuries, but he's definitely worth a late round roll of the dice, because at that point in drafts, you're pretty much playing lottery tickets. You know, you're kind of hoping if this hits, you know, I may win my league, and he's someone defensively. You get him for 65 games in terms of like the steals and blocks potential, he could help you win a league. So I think he's the one guy I would probably target on this roster as like a late round pick for fantasy drafts.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good one there. Goodness, he was one of the best defenders in the league when he's on the floor. But it is good to talk about him as, hey, like, he's a late round guy that has some upside, as opposed to he's not worth talking about because he's probably not going to play basketball this year. Like, we haven't heard anything in 2 years. So good to see him back playing basketball. But that's all we've got for today. Raph, before we go, anything that we should be keeping an eye on content-wise from you?
Oh, it's my turn in the fantasy recap series for Wednesday. And the Los Angeles Lakers. So, yeah, they made some news recently with a potential head coaching hire. So that'll be fun to kind of parse through. And then we also have our NBA Finals roundtable with some of our predictions for the upcoming series that starts on Thursday.
Yeah. Can you give us a sneak preview of it? Who do you have winning?
I like Boston in six. I think occasional, you know, cases of sleepwalking aside, they've been the best team in the NBA all season long. So I'm not going to deviate from that at this point.
Yeah, I went Boston in five, so I hope I'm wrong. I'm going to be rooting for Dallas to win, and in seven games, so there's more basketball. But I have Boston in five just because. Yeah, we'll let everybody read it to get the actual analysis. That's going to do it for this one. You guys can give Raph a follow at RaphaelJ on Twitter. Raph, thank you for joining me for this.
Hey, thanks for having me, Noah.
of course, anytime. But that's going to do it for this one. So you guys can follow me on Twitter at NoahRubin22. And I will see you guys next time. Thanks.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.